Blog Talk Radio.
Covers 858-947-6607 is the number to talk to the host. You can also catch us at Blog Talk Radio. No Covers, the chat room is now open. Those who want to talk in the chat room and just listen. Those who are traveling with us, we thank you for supporting the show. It's No Covers, it's time to rise up. Black History this month, today. In Black History, May 19th, 1925, a man was born named Malcolm Little. Man found himself, became Malcolm X. May 19th, 1925, a man was born. He was born Malcolm Little. Man found himself. Man came out. Today's birthday. John Red Malcolm X. No Covers on Blog Talk Radio. No Stay. May 19th, 1925. Birthday of Malcolm X. This is No Covers Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank our listeners last week for tuning in. Friday show, jam the lineup. So the support is there, so we're going to keep doing it. Moving to our weekend edition. We won't have that trouble next week because we got some more lines in the house. Thank you for the support. We've added some additional lines. I was given an assignment last week. My minister, and he told me to do something. He told me to put on the top of it. He said, I want you brothers to put on the top of it for the love of our people. I didn't know what he was talking about. I knew what he was talking about, but I knew what he meant by it. But I didn't really know what he meant until I started working on the project. And I was working on it the night before, and then last night, for the love of our people, you gotta love black people to do this work. And a lot of times when he said that, I could feel what he was saying, because a lot of folks have been out there in this struggle, redemption of black people, 5, 10, 15, 25, 30 years, 35 plus years. Some people have been in it for most of their life. Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is 79 years old. He's 20-something when he came into the nation. Stokely Carmichael, I think about, who died, Kwame Ture, on his post, still struggling for black liberation. I think about Noble Drew Ali and Marcus Garvey in 1913 and 1916. You know, in that, those early years coming out of World War, America is in, you know, chaos. Here these brothers, you know, find knowledge of self, donning the uniforms of knowledge of self, changing the environment, challenging the system, a system of oppression. You know, Marcus Garvey was deported back to his country. His people began to talk about him, say he ripped them off. He was battling the Boers. I think about Booker T. Washington and the Boers, how they battled, but they all had the love of the people. Even though they battled with each other, they had the love for the people. They just had different philosophical ways and the philosophical ideas of reaching the people, but the love of the people was still there. I think about Frederick Douglass, you know, a free slave trying to get others free, not saying, hey, I got mine, you get yours. You know, I'm free, but I want you all to feel what this freedom feels like, to be able to go here and speak here and do that. So I'm going to fight with these northerners who were racist too in their own way, but I had to fight with them so that I could get others free. You know, Harriet Tubman, she's escaped. She could go. She was in Canada. She come back through the north, back down south with a rifle in her hand. She carried a rifle because she told a slave, you turn back, I'm going to shoot you because I don't want to lose none. You go back, you give us away, so I'm going to have to shoot you on spot. She loved the people, the Underground Railroad, finding a way for them to get in and out. Shirley Chisholm running for president of the United States before anybody black thought about, you know, even stepping out there like that and making it politically possible. Run, Jesse, run, yes, but there was a Shirley Chisholm before that who dared to dream, Mae Jemison, who dared to dream to be the first woman astronaut to go into space. Lewis Latimer, who sat there and discovered the light bulb filament and didn't get credit for it because Edison took it from him and patented it, died a slave. The love of our people, Langston Hughes with his creative writing, how he talked about simple and them feet, how he was able to write and breed off James Baldwin, who gave us The Fire Next Time, Richard Wright, who gave us Native Son, for the love of our people. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who loved us so much, running from the government, from house to house, running from here, just the love of our people. So when he told me to think about that and put that on the top, I understood, because a lot of folks have been doing this for years. And you got to love your people. You got to love black people today. Don't worry about the condition we're in. Understand that the condition that we're in was designed this way. Don't walk past the brother on the street and just pass them by, just thinking he wants to sit in the gutter and wants to be there. He was designed. It was designed for him to be there. Don't look at your community and ride by and lock your doors and say, oh, they just don't want anything. Challenge these folks in this country who say that. Who say that the child in the ghetto that has his pants down sagging, he doesn't want anything. The woman that has 3-4 babies, she doesn't want anything. This was a systematic plan, plot to destroy. We were never brought here to be anything but a slave. And understand, when Lincoln freed the slaves, he only did it because he wanted to keep the country together. It was too divisive. But he didn't free the slaves because he wanted them to be free. America never designed for blacks to be free. Understand, as we went through the civil rights struggle, understand that King realized before he died, before that bullet hit him, he realized that, oh, I'm running my people into a burning house. I am bringing my people into a burning house, is what he said. Understand what he was saying. He understood, oh, America is never designed for our people to be totally free economically. It cannot survive if we are totally free. It has to keep a population in the mire, a population of children breeding off music and culture that's designed to keep them enslaved. America is designed this way. Fox, NBC, ABC, CBS, ESPN, all of the stations, none owned by us. It is designed this way to keep our young people following a systematic chart path of destruction. And so we come to you, No Covers, time to rise up. We come to you as No Covers, as a talk show designed to give our people another answer. So today we want to share with you some words from my good brother Cornel West. This is the weekend edition of No Covers.
Resistance. And when I saw you take the picture together, I could see Nat Turner and John Brown. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I could see the workers' movement in the 1890s. I could see the brothers and sisters on the corner of Watts, 1965, in Detroit, in 67, in Newark, in 67, in 212 rebellions tonight. Brother Martin Luther King was shot down like a dog 1 year after he gave his Beyond Vietnam speech to bring poor people together and bring a critique to bear on the viciousness of American imperialism. That's what we're talking about here. That's what we're talking about here. So 40 years later, we come back to commemorate this struggle against the historical backdrop of a people who have been so terrorized and traumatized and stigmatized that we have been taught to be scared, intimidated, always afraid, distrustful of one another, and disrespectful of one another. But the Atticus Rebellion was a counter move in that direction. I call it the niggerization of a people, not just black people, because America has been niggerized since 9/11. When you niggerize, you're unsafe, unprotected, subject to random violence, hated for who you are. You become so scared that you defer to the powers that be, and you're willing to consent to your own domination. And that's the history of black people in America. That's the history of black people in America. Anytime you look the terror in the face and you deal with the trauma, even if maybe all you could do is sing a song, and let us never forget the summer of 1971, the number one album in America. Oh. What's going on? What's going on? Who really cares? Save the baby. What's happening, brother? And Donnie Hathaway was in on the sideline. And so was Nina Simone. And so was Gil Scott Heron. And so was Pharrell Sanders and Miles Davis and others. You had a whole context in which you could look at terror and trauma and stigma in the face and say, we're going to stand the way Sly Stone said, stand that same year in his hour. That's what we're talking about. And we live now in revolutionary times, but the counter-revolution is winning. The counter-revolution is winning. The greedy oligarchs corporations don't pay taxes. Been gobbling up billions of dollars. And yet, not just 21% of our children living in poverty of all colors, each one precious. 42% of America's children live in poverty or near poverty. That is sick. It's a moral obscenity. It's a national disgrace. And yet, we have a political class, no matter what color they are, that won't say a mumbling word about that poverty. Why? Because it sits outside of the give and fro between a right-wing, mean-spirited Republican Party run by the oligarchs and plutocrats and a spineless Democratic Party that's got ties to the oligarchs and plutocrats, and the poor people get left out. They get invisible, disposable. And yet we see the same brothers in the 1950s and 60s who were coming out of socially neglected and economically abandoned spaces called the ghetto by Donny Hathaway. By Donny Hathaway, when he said ghetto, that wasn't disgraded, that wasn't demeaning. If you from the ghetto, the way he talked about it, you straightened your back up. You got your mind together. You had love in your heart for your brother and sister on the block. And it started on the chocolate side of town, but it spilled over to the vanilla side and the red side and the yellow side and the brown side, too. The unity that we had in Attica among the black and brown. And I saw some white brothers, too. Oh, yes. And that's elementary. You got to have the unity, but you got to be honest about the powers that be dividing and conquering. And this revolutionary moment where the counter-revolution is winning. I'm a looking brother. Brother, I've been so inspired by you for 25 years. Because you've been talking the same thing I'm talking about right now. Same language here in Africa. We had a good time in Ghana together. Oh, yes, we did. But now it's coming back. It's coming back. And the young people are hungry and thirsty, but the young people are thirsty for truth. Oh, yes, they're hungry for truth. And the problem is that most of our leaders have either sold out, caved in, gave up. They don't want to tell people the truth. They're too concerned about their careers. They're too concerned about success. They're too concerned about just winning the next election for their status. The 1971, the Attica brothers told the truth, but they weren't the only ones. You had hope. Cacophony of voices telling the truth. But who wants to tell the truth? The condition of truth is to allow suffering to speak. You don't talk about poverty, you're not telling the truth. You're not talking about working people being pushed against the wall with corporate profits high. You're not telling the truth. If you're not talking about the criminal activity on Wall Street and not one person going to jail yet, you're not telling the truth. Don't tell me about the crime on the block with brothers and sisters and Jamal and Leticia out taking to jail, and yet gangsters who are engaged in fraudulent activity, insider trading, market manipulation, walk around having tea at night. That's what we need, but the sad thing is, and I'm going to end on this, the sad thing is the kind of courage that these brothers had in 1971 is in short supply. It's in short supply. Because when you bring together the national security state and the military industrial complex, when you bring together the prison industrial complex and all the profits that flow from it, when you bring together the corporate media multiplex that don't want to allow for serious dialogue, unless we got Sister Amy or Brother Tavis and some others. And then when you bring together the Wall Street oligarchs and the the corporate plutocrats, and they tell any person or any group, if you speak the truth, we'll shoot you down like a dog and dehumanize you the way we do typically humanize the brothers in Attica. The only thing that will keep you going is you better have some love in your heart for the people. That's the only thing that will keep you going. The only reason why it's a long-distance runner, the Ruba. The only reason why Baraka is a long-distance runner. I don't care if you agree with them ideologically or not. It doesn't make any difference. They got enough love for the people in their heart to still tell the truth about poverty, about suffering, about struggle, and be able to look not just presidents, because by presidents you're just talking about the placeholder of the oligarchs and the plutocrats. I don't care what color they are. to tell that truth. And most people, they hold off on that. They say, no, I got one life. I saw what they did. I said, no. We're going to have a new wave. We're going to have a new wave of truth telling. We're going to have a new wave of witness bearing. And we're going to teach the younger generation that these brothers didn't struggle in vain, just like John Brown and Nat Turner and Marcus Garvey and Martin King and Miles Fortin and the others did. And we shall see what happens. We might get crushed too. But you know what? Then you just go down swinging like Ella Fitzgerald and Muhammad Ali.
We talking about a love for the people this morning. This is No Covers Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live out of the port city of Wilmington, North Carolina. See, that's what it's about. It's weekend edition. You gotta love the people. You gotta care enough. Stay out there on the front line. May get tired, may get weary, but you gotta push and push harder. Be strong, be resilient, be steadfast. The reward is coming. The people gonna be free one day. God wouldn't put us in this condition and leave us here. Oh yes, He wouldn't leave us here. He sent messengers for us, and He has a messenger in our midst today. Oh, it's time to free the people. May 19th, 1925, this is No Covers on Blog Talk Radio for the love of our people. In the closing minutes of today's segment, we'd like to celebrate the birth, as we said earlier, a man born Malcolm Little, a man that died, found himself, and died Malcolm X. Today, May 19th, we're paying tribute to our brother Malcolm X.
I see, am I justified in this stand? And I say, I'm speaking as a black man from America, which is a racist society. No matter how much you hear it talk about democracy, it's as racist as South Africa, or as racist as Portugal, or as racist as any other racialist society on this earth. The only difference between it and South Africa preaches separation and practices separation. America preaches integration and practices segregation. This is the only difference. They don't practice what they preach. Whereas South Africa preaches and practices the same thing. I have more respect for a man who lets me know where he stands, even if he's wrong, than the one who comes up like an angel and is nothing but a devil. The system of government that America has consists of committees. There are 16 senatorial committees that govern the country and 20 congressional committees. 10 of the 16 senatorial committees are in the hands of Southern racialists, senators, who are racialists. 13 of the 20, about this was before the last election, I think it's even more so now. 10 of the 16 committees, senatorial committees, are in the hands of senators who are Southern racialists. 13 of the 20 congressional committees were in the hands of Southern congressmen who are racialists. Which means out of the 36 committees that govern the foreign and domestic direction of that government, 23 are in the hands of Southern racialists, men who in no way believe in the equality of man, and men who do anything within their power to see that the black man never gets to the same seat or to the same level that they are on. The reason that these men from that area have that type of power is because America has a seniority system. And these who have that seniority have been there longer than anyone else because the black people in the areas where they live can't vote. And it is only because the black man is deprived of his vote that puts these men in positions of power that gives them such influence in the government beyond their actual intellectual or political ability, or even beyond the number of people from the areas that they represent. So we can see in that country that no matter what the federal government professes to be doing, the power of the federal government lies in these committees. And any time a black man or any kind of legislation is proposed to benefit the black man or give the black man his just due, we find that it's locked up in these committees right here. And when they let something through the committee, usually it is so chopped up and fixed up that by the time it becomes law, it's a law that can't be enforced. Well, another example is the Supreme Court desegregation decision that was handed down in 1954. This is a law. And this law, they have not been able to implement this law in New York City or in Boston or in Cleveland or Chicago or the northern cities. And my contention is that any time you have a country, supposedly a democracy, supposedly the land of the free and the home of the brave, and it can't enforce laws, even in the northernmost cosmopolitan and progressive part of it, that will benefit a black man, if those laws can't be enforced or that law can't be enforced, how much heart do you think we will get when they pass some civil rights legislation which only involves more laws? If they can't enforce this law, they'll never enforce those laws. So my contention is that we are faced with a racialistic society, a society in which they are deceitful, deceptive, and the only way we can bring about a change is to talk the kind of language, speak the language that they understand. The racialists never understands a peaceful language. The racialist never understands the nonviolent language. The racialist, he's spoken his language to us for 400 years. We have been the victim of his brutality. We are the ones who face his dogs that tear the flesh from our limbs only because we want to enforce the Supreme Court decision. We are the ones who have our skulls crushed, not by the Ku Klux Klan, but by policemen, only because we want to enforce what they call the Supreme Court decision. We are the ones upon whom water hoses are turned with pressure so hard that it rips the clothes from our backs. Not men, but the clothes from the backs of women and children. You've seen it yourself. Only because we want to enforce what they call the law. Well, any time you live in a society supposedly based upon law, and it doesn't enforce its own law because the color of a man's skin happens to be wrong, then I say those people are justified to resort to any means necessary to bring about justice where the government can't give them justice. Unjustified extremism. But I believe that when a man is exercising extremism, a human being is exercising extremism in defense of liberty for human beings, it's no vice. And when one is moderate in the pursuit of justice for human beings, I say he's a sinner. And I might add in my conclusion, in fact, America is one of the best examples when you read its history about extremism. Old Patrick Henry said, liberty or death. That's extreme. Very extreme. I read once, passingly, about a man named Shakespeare. I only read about him passingly, but I remember one thing he wrote that kind of moved me. He put it in the mouth of Hamlet, I think it was, who said, to be or not to be. He was in doubt about something. Whether it was nobler in the mind of man to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, moderation, or to take up arms against the sea of troubles and by opposing, end them. And I go for that. If you take up arms, you'll end it. But if you sit around and wait for the one who's in power to make up his mind that he should end it, you'll be waiting a long time. And in my opinion, the young generation of whites, blacks, browns, whatever else there is, you're living at a time of extremism, a time of revolution, a time when there's got to be a change. People in power have misused it, and now there has to be a change, and a better world has to be built, and the only way it's going to be built is with extreme methods. And I, for one, will join in with anyone. Don't care what color you are, as long as you want to change this miserable condition that exists on this earth.
You've been listening to No Covers on Blog Talk Radio. We thank you for listening to our weekend edition. For the love of our people, tune in tomorrow morning for our Sunday sermon at 8 a.m. This is Blog Talk Radio. The show is called No Covers.